Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and good morning to Honorable Members. officials of our partner from DAF and Provincial Dr. Da, which is the Rural Development and Agrarian Reform Department. Let me also take the opportunity, Chair, to appreciate and thank the portfolio for visiting the province of the Eastern Cape. Though I know that there were a number of activities, but it was quite an eye-opener even for us, the kind of questions, the kind of oversight probing matters that you also wanted to share and know. And this opportunity and also being invited here to sum up the visit and also give depth indications of what are the crucial issues that are pertaining to our provincial program when it comes to implementation of the policies, programs of the government, as well as how the department is performing at provincial level. The HOD Superintendent General, Mr. Lungile Ngata, will present the delegation and also walk us through on matter of detail. But I can, in the policy context, indicate that as the province of the Eastern Cape, we are also in line with the national mandate to ensure that we contribute to the employment of young people in the province, women in particular, disabled, and also revive agriculture as a sector that can have meaningful contribution in the national growth plans, and also in line with the national development plan. The province also cascaded the program of the provincial development plan taken from the key policy position of our government. The area of outcome servant share when it comes to job creation is something that we are going to attest here. The area of outcomes 10, which is our natural resources, what is it that the province intends to do? Also, Ilimalabandu Rural Development Strategy, how are we going to ensure that people in the province of the Eastern Cape benefit from the national transfers, also the grants that we are receiving? What is it between now and 2019 in the medium-term strategy framework we are intending to do in the province, utilizing the land that is still available, and our own position when it comes to the new growth path, as well as industrial policy action plan and agricultural policy action plans? And I think these are matters that will help the portfolio committee and the budget that we have from equitable share to additional grants that we have received from LACNAL, which constitutes 80-20 kind of split. Also, SG will walk us through on the projects largely made in the province of the Eastern Cape, and I think there will be a bit of details on how many projects in each district, what is the cost that goes to that, and I can attest to that the plans are now effectively implemented, and also areas that you visited, what is the progress report that we can share all together. And I think without waiting any time, sir, because we've been advised and informed about time constraints that by 10:30 we must be done and over, I think with indulgence, I will request that the SG present a delegation and walk us through the areas and elements that the portfolio committee intend to hear. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honourable MC. Good morning, Honourable members. Sorry for the delay. We just got caught up with traffic in the other side of the building. We thought we had reached where we were going to, but we were in the teacher's office. Now, the members that are coming to, so that we can make a meaningful explanation and contribution here, we've got Mr. Leon Kuse, who is our Deputy Director General for Agriculture Development. We've got Mr. Dalmane, who is our Chief of Operations. We've got Mr. Gokwana, who is our Chief Director responsible for agriculture training. We've got Dr. Makwela, who is responsible for our agriculture research, with special emphasis to crops and in particular to economy. Now, we've got the team from the... We've got Mr. Sanela, who's coming from our office of the MSA, liaison, parliamentary liaison officer. And I don't know that Chair could allow Mr. Stormy to introduce the DAF staff.
Good morning, Chairperson, Honourable Chairperson, and Honourable Members. My name is Boram Soum, acting of the Cruiser Grand Reform. I also like to send an apology for coming late. Secondly, I also again like to also apologize for Mr. Manya, who sent me on his behalf and said today he's meeting the Director General of Higher Education to discuss the shifting of Agricultural College from agriculture to higher education and training.
So he tendered his apologies. With me, and myself, is also Mr. Sibogazi Mvutana, who is the acting Deputy General for Fisheries, since most of the issues in transgressing the fisheries in aquaculture. Second, we also got Dr. Jimena Moink, who is the acting Chief Director for Food Security, and for Food Security, who was also part of the visit which took place. So that, and also, we couldn't bring Miss Tamjiza, but she's got bereavement, so she will come with us too on the tour. And we also got our colleagues who are in our city's office, the Veronica Nursing officers. Thank you very much.
Welcome, Deputy Minister. We have started with our team. They were just introducing you to on your behalf, DM, because it's came late. So Nkosi Mandela already has signed the DG of Eastern Cape in Ukomo because it's come late. So I don't know if that is in this. Okay. So we have. Nkosi Mandela will actually formalize that fine. You're welcome here. DG?
Thank you so much, Honorable Chair. Honorable Chair, what she did, there were these questions which were forwarded to us, and we responded to those questions. And then I must be aware that they are covering both the agriculture part, the fisheries, etc. We will dwell much on those which are really very comprehensive project on. And then the DAF is going to assist us with the fisheries component. Now, Honourable Chair, if you look at our first question there, it was looking at the budget positioning. That is, how much do we, the budget provided by DAF, that's our appropriation, that is provincial one. From the figures that we provided over there, Honourable Chair, you will notice that we've got a total of 1,975,606,000. That is overall total which we have. And out of that total, we remove what the province is providing, which is 1,650,712,000. Now, taking the difference between the two, you will notice therefore that 324,894,000 rand, that is our conditional grant, which is coming from the national department. Now, we just to draw some attention here, if you look at that 1.9, which is the total budget that we have that is considered by the equity reserve from the province, together with the conditional grants, as listed there. And out of that total, close to 1.1 goes to salaries, which is our conditional, which is our COE for the province, which equates to 54.5%. In other words, out of the total budget that we have, 54.5% goes to the COE. Now, the second question, Honourable Chair, was looking at the contribution of the sector to the GDP. The response over the Honourable Chair, we noticed that the contribution overall, it is at 2%. However, the contribution of the province, and out of that too, is rated at 1.2. The next one is the provincial GDP is going down. What is the cause of this? Now, we noted, Honourable Chair, that we are aware that basically the economy of the province is automotive and service driven. Now, because of the worldwide decline in the economy, which has actually hit the world, in a couple of years ago, so these industries were quite affected, that is automotive and the service industries was highly affected. Hence, therefore, the economy kind of like it dropped as well. Now, the next one, Honorable Chair, we come now to the East of Makwa, Madola Rescue Plan. Now, what it entails in this chair, Thank you, Chair. Let me just read this one slowly because it has got many details that are actually critical that we need to take note of. We notice here, Honourable Chair, that in 2011, PricewaterhouseCoopers was commissioned to do some work, and he outlined areas of non-compliance as it is marked for Enterprise PLTD. And as well as a recent audit of the company, it also revealed its data setting its data as a foreign concern. So technically speaking, if you look at this opening paragraph, it just doesn't show really a pleasing picture. But actually, the happened is that after in dealing with the issue, a steering committee was formulated, and that committee had members from the OTP, we've got members from Treasury, we've got members from the Department, and then from Economic Affairs, who actually considered the committee and an action plan and recommendation placing the company under business rescue in order for the business practitioner to develop a business rescue plan. In other words, the purpose is to identify a rescue plan business practitioner who is going to come up with a rescue plan, which will attend to both the ease of governance, which actually was reflected in the opening remark I made around Marwa, as well as operational challenges, which actually if the company was operating in a very smooth, it was supposed to be making a profit. However, we do notice that it doesn't make any profit, hence the rescue plan. As part of this process, a feasibility study will be developed to inform that this is a rescue plan. And the option is specifically assessed to two. This is a tea plantation. Number one, focus shall be on tea production. That is followed by the alternative agriculture and agro-processing options. You will recall, Honourable Chair, that this issue of alternative agriculture activities taking place at Magua was raised, has been raised actually now and again. I do remember a couple of years ago when the National Committee on Agri was there. I think when we were at the debating issue of Magua, this was actually raised in those days. If the TUC it is not making a profit or assurance, why not consider alternative? So in this rescue plan, therefore, that's why you notice for that we've got an alternative agriculture and agriculture options to be considered by the practitioner. The funding requirements and options. A company is operating, but no profit is being made. What is it that has to be done? What fund model must be provided to MAPA for it to stand on its feet? The institutional arrangements, its sustainability, as well as ownership arrangements, and future role of the state, and the future role of the government in the company. Now, the same approach is recommended for majority PTO LTD. You must notice therefore here that, Majola is employed by, is owned by the workers as opposed to Omagwa, which is a PTYLTD. But we are saying here, whatever we do at Omagwa, it is believed that because these two are experiencing the same challenges, it is believable that the same approach recommended for Majola LTD will also try to be used. The same approach for Magua will be extended to Majola PY LTD. Now, if only exception is that a business rescue needs to be initiated by the Majola Board of Directors in this instance, and the process steering committee is in process of facilitating the registration of the deregistered company, followed by stakeholder engagement to reconstitute the board of directors, as we all have board of directors in any event in both of the companies. So it means therefore, whatever we do in our rescue plan, it is critical therefore that is, there should be a board. It may be initially a one person to act as a board, upon a board, with the purpose that at the end, when the company is on its feet and a formal board could be appointed, that's going to be constituted within that business rescue plan. In other words, the terms of reference that are drawn for the business rescue plan, it includes what is to be done operationally as well as consider also social issues within the company. So as human beings there, even if you talk about the rescue plan, what is that to be done with those people there in terms of salary, etc., etc. So the rescue business rescue plan to take into consideration all those factors. Now, the rescue plan will be also looking at the various production process. The area has great potential, while the team itself is not profitable. In other words, as it has indicated earlier on, what alternative production is specifically considered here, taking into account the potential of the area. Can there be another alternative crop that would also be profitable in the area, maybe as an alternative to tea, or to rotate with tea, maybe if that's possible? This is what is actually entailed right here. The next honorable chair that I must touch on is the issue on river mid. The question here is, why do we build this new pack at river mid, while there are a number of these infrastructures not 100% utilized in the neighborhood? Now, the explanation, honorable members, goes as follows. We recognize that this pack house is in Pedi, 70 kilometers from the nearest functional pack house that is in Fort Beaufort. In other words, there comes a distinct issue from where to go, where they are now marketing their produce. That is, the producers at Ripplemead have got to use the pack shed that are in Fort Beaufort. That distance on a gravel road, as well as the packing costs charged by the Fort Beaufort, that those combined, they reduce the net income of those farmers. Now, without getting into details on the chair, we are mindful the sensitivity around the fruit carried on a gravel road. What happens to the quality? Will it still sustain the quality required for export? So those are issues that need to be taken into consideration. The new pack house will be used by all citrus farmers in the Mongolia area and area to market their citrus directly to exporters. In other words, therefore, rather than saying this is going to be focusing to the owners of the current recruitment pack shed, the benefits shall be extended to all the members of the citrus growers in the neighborhood, that is in the Mongolia area. So that is why, therefore, it becomes more critical that the recruitment pack shed is considered to be constructed. The next item here, honorable members, honorable chair, the question was the number of errant farmers in the province. What we've done, honorable chair and honorable member, we tabulated this in this number 6 table, where we've got our district and our number of farms. In Amatole and BCM, we've got a total of 174, followed by Nelson Mandela Bay, 45, O.R. Tambo, Reed, 76, while Chris Hani is at 258, Sarah Bartman is at 160, and Alfred Nzo is at 10. That is a provincial figure of 723. Those are our errant farms that are in the province. The next one, honorable chair, is around the status of agriculture in the province. The agri-parks program is a common concern, honorable members. It is not it's not kind of an electric program, honorable chair. There's a lot going on. By the time we prepared this report, there were even other things developing, you know, in the agri-park program. However, what I'm going to do, I'm going to restrict myself here to what we actually gave you, despite that there are other developments that are taking place subsequently to the submitted to the report. The same happens with regards to this agri-park as follows. In all our 6 districts, council resolutions were received. The next, all district committees are operational. In other words, each of the committee associated to that specific park is actually operational. We come now to the Chris Hani business plan. It has been approved by our land reform for funding. All All other fast digital business plans were also submitted for evaluation. In other words, that initiative, by the time it submitted, it was the three planes that had gone through. But as we speak now, all of them, business plans of that disease have already gone through. Now, here, the focus commodities have been identified, not taking into account the diversity of crop production and the livestock taking place in province. So the diversity shall be expressed as well in the different agri-paths that are established in the province. The next item, Honorable Chair and members, is number 8, which is focusing on a pecuary on Prince Farm in Ukraine Road municipality, which is said to be in poor conditions. Furthermore, pigs in this project have not eaten for quite a couple of days and are in a bad condition. The question is, who is the officer responsible for the area, as it is believed the officer hasn't been seen for quite some time by the farmers? To sum up the response, Honorable Chair and members, we go back and try to track what's going on here. This is an elder farm that we recognize, where the institutional standing is in disarray. Land Reform Department is working hard in reviving operations of this farm. The first beneficiaries of this project have disintegrated as an association. Next, there is no known project that is taking place now on the farm. The farm is used by people who are not the intended beneficiaries. And currently, it is used by the community who are just using the farm on a temporary basis. Which is, in other words, if you look from this response, Honorable Chair members, there's a deviation from what the original project was intended to be. And therefore, that there is an intervention that is currently taking place from the Department of Land Reform. Now, I am going to request, Honorable Chair, if you can allow me to request our national department to deal with the fisheries sections, because they are well, therefore they have competence in this area. I was going to request you to ask our department to proceed from question number 9.
Thank you. Who can allow the GM, if you want to say something before we start. GM, we are taking this discussion emanating from the visit that the portfolio committee had visited here in Eastern Cape on the 14th to the 18th of September. So usually when we visited the provinces, the last day of our visit we have a debriefing and allow members to ask questions on their observations to the province, and the province responded, but unfortunately we didn't have that meeting in different case because the MC and the HOT were not available. So that's why we had this meeting today. But mainly the fishery things that we have observed falls under your department. So we can give you an opportunity to say something or to hand it over to your officials.
No, thanks, Honorable Chairperson. Not much. Oh, I can see. I think the DG is there. Chairperson, maybe jumping the gun, the point 7, no, 8. I think we will have to deliberate on that one going forward. Maybe asking the good office of the chair to see how we go further with the good office of the chair of the land reform on working on this on these matters, because we have been raising this parallelism of handing over vis-à-vis the sustainability thereafter. And where the competence of sustainability lies and where the competence of handing over lies, and not marrying those two competencies before it happens. So maybe moving from here, going forward, to the good office of the chair will be really asked to try and work on that. It has been really time, and I can look that it doesn't get a good ear in many other cultures going forward. The fisheries one, again, share is Eastern Cape, but I hope we will get the opportunity of the overall understanding and briefing of the fisheries thing. One major shortcoming, I was reading here, it still doesn't come close. It looks like we have one ocean in South Africa. We have only the west. We don't have the east coast. So I understand the FNDDG is quite hard on work of that, and I think we need to help. For the fact that all your fishing ports are in one sea, one ocean, and nothing on the east. They speak English if you ask them. If you ask them why our fish comes from the west coast only, and not the east, they speak English of, I don't know, the species, because of the Indian Ocean is hot, so there is less intensity of feed. And they explain. So I ask, where are the scientists? Because if there are species living there, the only thing they must be increased. They are not saying nothing lives there. There are things living there. So why the capacity of their life is not increased? Where are the scientists? They say they don't have scientists. So I just wish that under the call of the president of Operation Pakisa, will be maximizing the east. Many other things, Honorable Chair, including, I'm sure they will be talking a little bit, the leakages of the crime that happens on this industry. There are huge leakages. Not small, very huge leakages. I think last week, on the confiscated balloons, were confiscated by the department and were raided and taken after they've been confiscated and are in the custody of the department. And the department was raided and those balloons were taken. So, were confiscated by DAF from the illegal fishermen. And as DAF keeping them, they were raided by criminals from DAF. Through guns. And they take it. But the issue, some people tell that when they were raided, they were missing officials in the particular time of raid. In the particular time of raid, they were missing people. They just went for lunch or whatever. And in that lunch, they took and they came back. So, one huge thing this special huge is leakage that has been raised time and again. I saw it again here with the next question that will be stopped. That is the competence of the South African police. I don't know, sir, if it's a priority of these matters of the stealing case and the stop theft vis-a-vis the crime they're facing, or we'll have to follow the direction taken by environmental affairs when it comes to Obidjan, because they've taken it for to themselves that those rhinos are safe. So that should be the comment. But let's say Eastern Cape, which is much better than the far east of the sea. Eastern Cape is still much better than the sea that and of the 540 kilometers from Port Edward to Kosibe. So the utilization of that stretch of the east will have to be really improved to maximize the benefits of the South African people.
Thank you.
you very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. I think just before I respond on the questions that are posed here and the issues that DM is correctly putting to us, I just need clarity and guidance from you, Chair, because the sequence of the questions, you don't have all the officials' questions grouped together. The next questions are questions that my colleague Bonga has to take. So I don't know whether we should do all the issues or we just follow the sequence of the questions, then we will be alternating in terms of response. If I can get your guidance, please.
Okay, you can say all the issues and then the DC will then finalize it.
Thank you very much, Chair. The question 9, in terms of who deals with the issues in the province in Eastern Cape, I think just to latch on what DM has responded to, this is a result of the history that you would find that in the Eastern Cape we don't really have fisheries offices. You'll also find that the staff there is just compliance staff, people who are literally just doing the data collection, catch data monitoring, to check who is catching what fish, where, how much they are catching. And also because of the new implementation plan of the small scale fisheries, then you have fisheries officers there that are mainly focusing on the popularization or the marketing and information sharing on the small scale fisheries. These people are found in Port Elizabeth, only two people in Port Elizabeth, for instance, Port Alfred, just one person, East London, three people, Port St. John's, also two people. So you notice that this will be the size of the staff that we will have in fisheries in Cape Town, for instance. In the building here, we've got about 400 staff that we have in the building. So you'll see that there is really no justice that is made for the province within this regard. However, I must also report on the Chair that we are really trying to relook into this issue. Only last week, on Friday, Minister was invited in East London, the Buffalo City Municipality. They were having a summit on an economic summit. The Minister was requested to come and present on Operation Pakis. We did go there, and we have had extensive deliberations in terms of how do we utilize Operation Pakis so that we can really extend the footprint of not just compliance officers, but of fisheries as a whole in the province. And DM is correct, Honorable Chair. Although there is not too much fish that is found within that coast, there are other things that can be done in that coast, even issues that range from value chain. For instance, fish feed. We have a problem with fish feed in South Africa. While we are talking about increasing the production through aquaculture, that fish must be fed, and there are no fish feed producers in the country. So it means we end up having to import fish feed. So these are some of the issues and anchors that the coast in that area can rely on. Also, as DM is correctly saying, it is not that there is no fish there. It is only that we are not doing research on the East Coast. All our research is mainly focused on the West Coast because of the history and also because of the abundance, as he has talked, in terms of the productivity between the Atlantic Ocean and Indian Ocean. But the problem is that because commercial fishing has mainly been in the Western Cape, so we also have focused as a department historically on our efforts that go with research on this side. However, there are universities in the province that we think if we can't have researchers on the ground, the Rhodes University, Walter Sisulu University, and the University of Fort Hare are universities that we think we can start to really beef up our partnerships with them, so that because they have an interest in. And I'm also saying this because I did my first degree at the University of Fort Hare, and I did my research in some of the estuaries that are in around the East London area. But of course, you found that there was a departure of a number of researchers in these universities. For instance, I can speak to them. Most of the researchers, they left and they joined management. Professor Rod Barley, for instance, in management, other professors retired. So there was a little bit hiccup in terms of the succession and who takes over there. But now we have some few, two people, for instance, the areas of 40 that are spearheading this. We just need to intensify our partnerships in terms of leveraging in terms of that. The second issue, ten, Honorable Chair, the ownership of the land is communal. Our Tambo District and the titles are held by government. And the issue of how we plan to involve the youth in aquaculture, this is one of the things that we are beginning to intensify. Under Operation Pakisa, we as the department are leading the deliverable unit 4, which is aquaculture. We have different plans that we have tabulated in terms of how to increase the production, how we intend to have contribution to growth and GDP, and in terms of the jobs and including capacity development, because it was very clear that we may not necessarily have all the skills that we need to attain this level of production. But we realize that we need to be more proactive in terms of having intake, in terms of young people. So we are also looking to exploit the intake through the internship programs of the students. We take people on an internship basis, on a year basis. We are looking at a plan of retaining these people so that we can also channel and redirect these people to even do the actual farming of the fish themselves when they leave the department. But of course, all things being equal in terms of the resources that we can get in terms of attaining that. And the issue, Jay, in terms of the existing partnerships with, or in terms of research, I've spoken on that one. I'm not going to say that it's on point number 12. And the other is on page 4, point number 14, in terms of the reasons or the slow growth of aquaculture. I think the issue of the enabling environment in the aquaculture sector has been one of the key things. We have reportedly, repeatedly indicated that because we had so much fish in the ocean, and this is not a South African phenomenon, by the way, the world as a whole has relied on wild capture fisheries for these fish in the ocean. When technology improved, the population went up, the fish started to decline in the oceans because there was higher demand, technology was becoming more, so it was getting more easier to catch fish. That is when the whole world started to think, but hang on, this population is growing, the technologies we are improving, we seem to be cleaning the capture fisheries, the wild capture fisheries. Where is the protein going to come from? Then that's when the whole world started to think, wow, maybe let's farm the fish. So South Africa has fallen in that trap as well, where we have focused all our efforts on just capturing fish in the ocean, but said this fish has been there, it's never going away. The issues of environmental changes as well are a key impact here, and climate change issues, that now we don't think the fish in the ocean will remain there forever. There is that need to look in this. However then, if we start to do that paradigm shift in the country, your policies need to have that paradigm shift. Your allocation of resources needs to follow. So the challenge here has been the legislation itself. And if you look at our Marine Living Resources Act of 1998 that we are currently using, you will hear no mention of aquaculture there. So we have to develop an aquaculture bill that is going to focus the effort and drive the aquaculture sector, and in particular the inland fisheries, because again, when we think aquaculture in South Africa, we'll be talking about mariculture, which is ocean aquaculture, but we have got state-owned dams of over 300 state-owned dams across the whole country, and in particular in inland, where you want to look at this. And the issue of funding, again, I think we have emphasized this issue, that we need the funding, we need the infrastructure in enabling us to really push this sector to be where it is supposed to be. And this sector, 15, can attract new job seekers. Absolutely, when all of these things are put into place, Honorable Chair, we think there's an opportunity, particularly because aquaculture has a potential to even develop rural economies, because you can take aquaculture to the most remote area, and it will be there if it will employ the people there, if you look also in processing and everything. An example, I think the Honorable Chair will remember, the Honorable Member, the visit you undertook to Hamburg. That was a project that we had funded in Hamburg, very particular, we were funding. We also want to look at them in expanding that so that they do the oysters as well. And if you think about oysters and you think about Western Cape, many of you will remember the oyster festival that happens all the time around Hermanus. And these are the kind of issues saying you can even have skin off in terms of the tourism, because you know that festival attracts people from all over the world. They come for that. And if you were to have an Easter hub in Hamburg, it means you will have growth there. There will need to be there need for B&Bs or hotels maybe, and then resorts and stuff like that. So there's a lot of direct skin off we think that can contribute toward a job creation as well. And in terms of the Mthatha Dam Hatchery, honorable member, we have a partnership with Rhodes University there for a unit called the Rhodes Rural Fisheries Program. And we are in partnership with them, and we were in partnership with them when they developed this facility. And we have set aside 2 million rand for the revitalization of the infrastructure and the restocking of that facility. And I should also indicate that this is one of the projects that has shown that partnering with the province is a very good thing, because this was revived by the province actually, because it used to be up and going in the early 80s and it died down, but the province revitalized this in 2014-15 financial year. They've put in some money, some effort, and I think we have proof that if we can intensify our partnership and really leverage on the resources, we can do much more on this impact them. However, we are waiting for the aquaculture bill, the inland fisheries bill in particular. Once we have that, then it will also be a further enabler. But of course, we cannot sit and wait and do nothing, saying we are waiting for a bill. This is an example that we have started doing something, and we think that the bill will just further enable us in terms of intensifying this. The oyster rafters are 15 years old. Their maintenance happens annually. These rats, they always get replaced as and when. Oyster is one of the easy farming, I think, not really much of infrastructure. So you kind of have low maintenance kind of a thing. I think currently if you go to the Cape Town fish market, they sell oyster. One oyster is about 17 rands per oyster. So this is something that is quite having a very huge potential, and we think in the Eastern Cape this can really be intensified in terms of its funding. It is easy and it can be done relatively quicker. And on the issue of looking at the numbers of production and jobs and targets, we had a target of 15,000 jobs by 2019, and as I say, these are coming from plans that we have through the delivery unit of Operation Patisa. We had anticipated by 2019 to grow the aquaculture sector from the current 5,000 tons to about 20,000 tons. And FDM has really challenged us on this issue to say, why would you want to do 20,000 tons and not think about 100,000 tons in the year by 2019? And I think this came as a result when we had a visit to Japan, and FDM was leading the delegation from the department. The Japanese reflected 1.5 million tons per year of their production. And FDM looked at me and he says, but I mean, hang on, tell me, we can't hear at an international meeting. You want to stand up and say we aspire for 20,000 tons when these people are doing 1.5 million tons. But the issue is that we have had these conservative numbers, because given the current situation, the infrastructure we have, the budgets we have, everything, but absolutely it is possible that we can even double and triple that amount of target. As I say, all things being equal, that we get to have better budgets, better infrastructure. The extent of poaching along the coast chain, honorable members, varies from species to species and area. So in the Eastern Cape, you would have much more intensity of poaching in the southern part, southern Galahad, where it tends to Port Elizabeth, because you've got high value species there. And you would have a lot of this as well around the East London coastal, wide coast, because you have the East Coast rock lobster and some other valuable species. So the higher the value of the species, the higher the potential for poaching happens. Low value species, nobody really bothers much about that. However, I must indicate that as the department, we are taking a new direction in terms of intensifying the efforts around compliance and the efforts around fighting poaching. I will come to the issue that DM has indicated of the poached abalone that was taken from the stores of the department. But we are looking at rolling out in the four coastal provinces a program that is going to fall under Operation Patisa, under the coastal, the the ocean governments. We are intensifying efforts there in terms of the monitoring, compliance and surveillance that we are going to do. And this we want to do in partnership with the security cluster, and in particular in utilizing the veterans that we have all around our country that we want to put through this program. We have had a pilot project in the Overberg region in the Western Cape with regards to this program that involves the military veterans. It has worked fantastically well. However, there was a problem that program has fallen out of place, and we have just returned that project, and we see that this project is good and it needs to be replicated throughout the whole coastal provinces, the four coastal provinces. The small scale fisheries policy is continually being engaged on. We are currently finalizing the process of the guaranteeing of the small scale so that we can be able to start the rollout in terms of the allocations. Today at the department, after this meeting, we are having a meeting to discuss the apportionment of the allocation that is going to be set aside for the small scale. Because as we have continuously said, we have 22 commercial fisheries, and we cannot continue to give 22 fisheries to commercial and not reserve anything for small scale fisheries. So today we're having this discussion to look at the percentage of the total allowable catch that we are going to set aside in terms of the small scale fisheries. 21, 22, Chair, 23, I skip, and 24, my colleague will talk to that. HR in Mthatha, I have already spoke on that one. That's number 25. Number 26 is talking on the research that is done on promoting eating of fish. Again, we know in South Africa we are not an eat fishing nation. We are a meat fishing nation. I think I made an example the other time. I was in the rural villages, and we were talking to the people, trying to tell them they must eat more fish. And this old man tells me, he said to me, now, when I go, my son's cousin, I have, has got four sons. Now, if they go through initiation, he wants to tell me I must take a pile of fish and combine these fish together and go and present. I will take a sheep or a goat or a cow. That is how we do our tradition. But the issue here, Honorable Member, I think he was trying to bring was that it is embedded within cultures in terms of having a preference of a cow rather than a fish, of course. But we had very interesting discussions with them because we were showing them the abundance of fish that just lies in their waters. But what we are doing currently, Honorable Members, we are partnering with SIBA. I think many of you will know SIBA is a girl from the Eastern Cape. She cooks on national television. She also appears on BBC on the cooking program. We are partnering with her in terms of now popularizing the eating of fish. SIBA is going to be doing booklets for us with little results in terms of trying to get people. Because one of the things we found that people don't necessarily eat fish also because they don't know how to prepare the fish. Would rather go to takeys or whatever takeaway place because they literally don't know how to prepare. So we think that providing people with just booklets where you just simply take a fish, how you cut it, how you clean it, how you scale it, and how you just put pepper and salt and you put it on the coals and if you think of the rural communities, the schools that you have there, the hospitals that you have there that can really utilize the fish that comes out of the ocean in terms of providing a better nutrition. So we are partnering in that space, Honorable Chair, so that we increase the visibility of the eating of the fish. That also goes hand in hand with the vegetable salad, because you will always eat your fish maybe with some veggies or everything. So we think it's an opportune time for DAF as a whole to really partner into the space. And also we are hosting continuously events in South Africa. We will be having first of its own kind to be hosted in Africa in 2017. The World Aquaculture Conference is going to be held in South Africa for the very first time in the history of 150 years. Coming to our shores in 2017, partnered with the World Aquaculture Society, who are also assisting us in terms of making sure that we increase the visibility and the benefits of eating fish. We are embarking also as a department on a survey. It was very interesting. We did a simple survey just at the department, just at our branch, to see how many people eat fish and how many days a week they eat fish. how do they eat it? Is it wild? Is it grilled? Their results are quite shocking. It looks like we have to sweep in our front doors before we even think of sweeping even further. But we are looking to take this survey to DAF as a whole, and we are looking to take this survey at a national level as a whole. Those are the issues, Chair, that relates to fisheries. The issue of the number 30, the stock, the rationale in terms of introducing new genetic material, I think this issue is a very critical one, because in South Africa also, you would remember, because I'm saying I knew in the aquaculture space, we are also very limited in terms of what we farm. When we went to Japan, again, I'll make an example, they are farming over 150 types of fish. In South Africa, we are farming literally about 4 or 5. And the issue is that why don't we modify and really diversify so that we can be able to really breed even far, much more than we are currently doing. 31, in terms of extension officers that are assigned to fisheries research, we, I think honorable chair members will remember that you yourself have constantly brought this to the department to say extension officers services seems to be focused more on the agriculture. It is very little from the fisheries, and indeed we still don't have from fisheries, but we are hoping and looking at that it could be addressed so that we can have that. In terms of the rationale in issuing permits to fishermen in the Eastern Cape to sell fish, this issue is a very topical one, and we have discussed it with the DM, because he told me that when he was a little boy in KZN, and back in the day, he used to go out with Utadumniwak, and they would catch a fish, catch imbalba, what you call mussels and stuff. And we've constantly been asked why, when people traditionally have lived close to these waters, they have been harvesting this fish, and all of a sudden you're telling them they need to have permits to do this. A classical example is in a border close to Mozambique, where they use crawls, fish crawls, where between the estuary and the ocean, when the fish are going back to the ocean, they trap them in fish crawls. And they've been doing this, a tradition many, many years old, but now the department saying, no, you need to have permits for this thing. The simple reason is that when the policy, Marine Living Resources Act of 1998 was developed, it was developed with a view that was focused on commercial. And hence, it left out the subsistence fishers, it left out the people who live close to the ocean. So you find that because they are not catered for in the act, then they are deemed as if they are illegal. But now also this issue is maybe confused by these provincial authorities who want to place themselves high above the department itself. You've got these passports, you've got these manganisos and everything, who are more looking at more at conservation more than at eating of this. So conservation is a different topic altogether. They will tell you we must close all the fishing areas for 150 years. I mean, hang on, it's not going to happen. From a fisheries point of view, we close areas for a short period of time to protect the fishes while they are breeding, but we want to open it for fisheries. So there is a huge contrast when you talk fisheries for fishing and when you talk conservation. So you've got these strong vocal groups that are more of conservation, that you tell you don't eat chicken, you can't kill animals and everything like that. So that is also causing much more problems. However, we are now starting to roll out permits, because one of the problems was that permits, and I think Honorable Chair, this is something that I think the Portfolio Committee should really, really hold us accountable to. It's very interesting. All fishing permits in South Africa are issued here in Fort Trust Building in Cape Town. It means a fisher from Northern Cape can't even send someone to submit their document. They have to catch a taxi, a bus, and come literally to Cape Town to have a permit issued. Sometimes they get there, they don't have places to sleep. I'm talking real issues that have happened in front of my eyes. They get to the department at 4:15. The officials have already gone home because it's nearly 4:30, it's nearly 4:45. Some they have to sleep in the basement because they don't even afford to book a hotel or accommodation somewhere. To wait for an official who is not going to open at 8 o'clock, but is going to open at 9 o'clock the following morning. Now, It's a very serious issue, because if you're talking about service delivery and we are talking about giving people access, that is not going to happen from this building in Cape Town. It needs to be centralized. It needs to be, it even needs to be electronic, because there is really no reason why a person has to come and present themselves in person to apply for this amendment. This huge paper and backlog. I mean, I was making an example the other time, going to Turkey. You apply for a visa to enter Turkey while you are at the check-in counter here at the airport, not even a day before. You are standing in a check-in counter, you apply for an e-visa, you immediately get it resended to your phone. Now when you board an aeroplane, you do your check-in online, you get an SMS, your flight is at this time. I think it's an issue of trying to embrace technology and really utilize technology to better the lives of the people. It's something real that is bothering me. It's causing me real sleepless nights. It is unacceptable, not at this day and age of technology. The duration of the permits of this Eastern Cape rock lobster tanks is 12 months. That also is something, Honorable Chair, we want to look at. The 12 months is also tied to fishing season, because the issue is that when you issue a permit, you also issue permit conditions, how much a person can catch, where they can catch. So allocation changes from one fishing season to another. So we are not able to make the fishing permit longer than 12 months, because you change the fishing season and their allocation may change, and that allocation needs to reflect on the permit. However, what we can change and make thicker is the issuing of the permit itself, as I have indicated. Excuse me. The explanation is 300 rands after 4 years. That instituted a pilot in the sustainable harvesting of abalone in the wild coast. Diving was done by the higher divers, and the dividends were then divided among the fishermen. Now, this payment was only done after 4 years, and this was the source of making this 300 rands per fisherman. And I think this one is something that we are wanting to relook through our management working group in terms of how we can make this more sustainable. It sounds like it's a little bit, lot of money, 300 rands over 4 years, but if you look at the investment that we do at the department in terms of the research and providing the equipment as well, is not necessarily, and also looking at the price of selling abalone. Abalone sells for 1,200 rand per kilogram. There's no fish currently in South Africa, well, except the bluefin tuna, which is an outlier. But all other fish, the most expensive rock lobster at Cape Town Fish Market, we get it for 200 rand per kilogram. But abalone is 1,200 rand per kilogram. So also the value of this species would call for this one. The causes of the killings in the White Coast, Chair, this issue is the issue I indicated, where you have protectionism that is done by the conservationists, and the people want to access the resources. There's a clash all the time, and sometimes it results to unpleasant situations. An example, you would remember the KZN, the wildlife issue, where a community member got shot. Issues are brought before the police for investigation. The 38, in terms of small-scale fishermen, in terms of understanding the policy, I indicated that we are continuously doing the advocacy around this, and in terms of telling the people what is happening around that, including 39, in terms of the consultation and the development of the legislation itself. We are continuously speeding up the process and intensifying the efforts in terms of this. In terms of the expectations from the fishermen, in terms of the process itself, I think the issue is that it's very clear. Fishermen, all they want to see is an allocation now. They are really tired about us talking about these processes and legislations and everything. All they want to do is access and rights in their hands, and we are aiming to do that by next year, March, at least, so that we have finalized the whole process. I thank you very much, Honourable Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you so much, Honourable Chair. Let me proceed, Chair, and I will go straight to the Global Community visit. Now, the issue considered around this project, Honourable Chair, is around half of all is that 1,800 per hectare contribution. And furthermore, we look at the institutional arrangement, and also what is it that they do now with the produce. and who supports them with the market issues and profitability that they actually make, as well as the upliftment of the youth, and lastly, the state support. Now, the 1.8 chair is a contribution by S Pharma, which is 1,800 per hectare, and the state contributes 2,200 per hectare. What farmers do, they keep the money in their own bank account, so that when now the season comes, now we come as the state, a decision is made. Me as a farmer, but I say, out of the total bill, maybe of 4,000, I'm going to procure a seed and fertilizer, and then the state is going to say, I'm going to provide my position for you. So there is that arrangement, there is that contribution from the farmer. It's kept in their account. It doesn't come deposited at all into the state and coffers. This is a community under the chair. They are not yet a apprentice. They still are pursuing as a project. And the may they get honorable members. The community are really, really smart people. They are entrepreneurs, but we may never understand them. The maize, they know about the price of maize. That if the maize was sold with the surface price, it might be very low, maybe. That's not about 90 rand per ton. And the farmers, within among themselves, they are selling it at about 150 rand per ton. So the farmers, what they do, they would rather trade among themselves. That's those who did plant, those who did grow any maize, they will provide the marketing for the ones, those who actually planted the maize. Now, there's another issue, Chairperson, and honorable member, that you were asking. This is more critical around who, therefore, supports them with the extension, with the marketing, you know, explanation. The department is constituted by a team of economists who actually, among them, are divided, so that there are others who are focusing more on marketing and provisioning of marketing information to the farmers. Now, they are doing that, and that information is provided to the extension officers who subsequently transmit that to the farmers. So that is, they are actually have an idea of how the market prices are looking at the commodity. Hence, therefore, it's quite easier for them to make their choices and say, if you are saying it's 90, you know, grams per ton, and yet around I can sell it 150, so they will go for 150. Now, if we look the number of five there, how much profit do they make? Is their production and irrigation on a dry land? Now, let's read this, honorable chair and members. The same here, we take a production of an average of 3 tons per hectare. And that is sold at 150 rand. And that 150 is per 40 kilogram bag of maize, which equates, therefore, to 3,700 rand per hectare. Now, this leaves a profit of 1,900 per hectare after deducting the input, that is, that investment they put of 1,800 out of their own contribution per hectare. So if you look at this balancing act here, it would appear, therefore, they do make some profit, which is recorded there as 900, that is the next they actually generate after deducting all the production costs. Now, the opportunity of youth. Here, honorable chair, is the youth involvement in the project. But it is, they are not as registered members, but they use the youth is present in support of the family, and other words, the participant in the provisioning of labor in the whole production chain. Now, we come now to the total investment of the state here. So I'm going to kind of sum up this thing. If you look at it here, let's look where we say Dr. Da firstly, 11.5 kilometers. That total to 127,724 rands covers the material and labor. Next, there was a contribution also by Mandinga. But however, let me put it up again back to the stage, which is Dr. Da again funded the project of 4 hectares and through the procurement of mechanization and inputs, which was costing the another extra 24,000 rands. Then come to 2014, the further investment was 631,050, which was covering 105 hectares. Now, if you took up all these figures together, they give a total of 1,082,814. That is the investment, therefore, that we can calculate that has been put into this project. Now, if we also further focus, is there any other employment opportunities for the project? These farmers do pay young people in the provisioning of labor in the project. The next item here, are the members of the project aware of other government support? Well, the extension officer is currently honorable chair and members supporting the communities, including this one, I mean all communities, particularly this one, about the information on what are the government programs, what is it that can the communities benefit from the government programs. That is an ongoing program and which actually, fortunately, has been actually linked as well to the annual performance plans which are designed nationally. Now, the other one, Honorable Chair, that I must ask to jump to is the issue of India for farmers visit, which actually as well is also, that is number 54, which is also questioning the involvement of children. Now, it is the same pattern we have mentioned here on it, because the one is the same as what is happening in Jebo, as how the children are involved and in what role are they provided into the project. Then we come next one to the role of the ARC in the project and the frequency. We report here, Honorable Chair and members, that the ARC is involved through the training of the farmers in production, business and the marketing skills of the participants. They have trained these farmers in the branding, breeding and selection of the animals. And during the year, they have not visited the project. And the last time they were, it was last year, and they are actually calling for some updates or focus on the farm, that is the ARC. Otherwise, the ARC has been abandoned the project itself. The issue on bulls, as to how long the bulls are kept in the project, I think the fear here is focusing on inbreeding, that is the bulls breeding their own children. It said here, which is an acceptable norm, an acceptable practice in farming, that the current bulls shall be removed from the herd once they are 3 years. And another bull, in other words, it will be brought in. This is a procedure that we actually do in our livestock improvement scheme. Where a bull is issued to a community, then you allow that bull to be there for a maximum of 3 years. After 3 years, we're going to take out that bull and recycle the bull, clean it first and recycle it to another community and introduce here another new bull. That's the prevention of inbreeding in that flock. Now, the question of how long is the project going to be assisted? Let me just read the chat. I think it says for how long is the project going to be assisted? And it must say here, the support that is now planned is on chicken production, because the farm, oh yes, has been developed in terms of infrastructure. this will be for a 3-year period. After the 3 years, support given on the farm will be on the process of technical advice. Yes, I just got confused. Yeah, I just got what you call it. I was talking about bulls, and I thought I'm just making up a number of things. Then after that, Honorable Chair, I think let me just quickly jump also to NWGA, which is about our wood. If you go there to number 81, there is that complaint that was made about the issue of the vaccines. You know, the blue tongue, etc. This has not been affecting only NWGA actually, even in our livestock improvement in the province, disease management. We experienced quite a lot of an underperformance in the previous quarter because we couldn't administer vaccines because the contract, this is the TRC-12 contract, which is usually signed, it was not signed at the National Department. Finally, it was signed, I guess, this is last month. Now, what we have done now, the orders have been issued, and the way this operates, the producers of vaccines will start producing them once they see the order being there. So the delay that we got from the completion of the TRC-12 contract is the one that didn't affect only the NWGA. It actually affected quite a lot around the animal disease and vaccination controls administration in province. And then what mechanism is in place to ensure that the communal farmers can be assisted by government to improve in their livestock quality? Now, there's a provisioning that the department is doing, the provisioning of sheep sharing sheds. There's a provisioning of, as I just mentioned, the vaccine, the provision of shipping, as well as the distribution of the rent that is given to the communities. Now, the rent, Honorable Chair, we tend to be biased towards providing a ramp which basically are more generous to the communities. Now, the issue of the community were invited to NAMAC. Now, let's just proceed to the another one. Let's go to number 85, Honorable Chair, members, where we talk about the fisheries this year, where it is right as to who. Communal PDIs, what is there is that with African farmers' children are not involved. How do they use this opportunity for transferring skills to their children? The response is on the chair members. Batteries were intended to attract skills to the industry. This is the fundamental number one. There is a battery to train national sharers, in other words, so that the quality of the wool that we cut from the sheep, we do not interfere much with the lens. There are success stories with the batteries that could be mentioned. As you could notice, the number of our sheep sharers have come winners in some of the competitions, international competitions. The industry chooses from the people they think they can employ, not specifically people who are farming, but rather the students that are employable in the industry. So that is how far, therefore, that is the battery that is available in the provision of the training that is going to support in the packaging of wood. The creation of additional jobs. What kind of jobs is in the last year? NWA responded as there were 1,100 jobs were created, and the industry has shrunk over the past 20 years. The good and bad farmers, black farmers, how are they performing versus their counterparts? In summary here, it shows no significant difference between the participants. However, this has been written as follows, our response. NWDA are supporting farmers to produce more commercially from the communal areas. Currently, 60% of all wool is from communal farmers. That is, the total package of the wool, 65% of that is coming from our communal farmers. The assessment showed that communal farmers receive the same amount as their counterparts. hence that there is no noticeable significant difference between the two groups. Measurement of wool is in the price, in other words, it ranged between 200,000 up to 131 million per annum. And this figure, honorable chair and members, soon there was an interference by introducing the rams into the community, as well as introducing sheep shearing shed of good quality, as well as the management of diseases, that is vaccination, sheep death control, etc. There was a significant difference in the production of wool. It is somehow one may not believe that areas that are really, really, really pure, far away communal, managed to produce quite a high net profit out of the wool which they produced. Now, the intention of NWGA to perpetuate the growth, then the industry is planning to increase the focus in this area. In other words, the growth and development of these communities who are ship owners. Therefore, there is a plan, therefore, from the NWGA that they have to perpetuate the growth. Now, the social responsibility where rural areas farming with the sheep gone down, the question of producing wool was beneficial. Then here we responded here, NWGA, the communal areas are actually growing. That is where the focus is. In other words, where we say, in order for us, be it we look at general crop production, beef production, wool production, if we want to make any impact, the interference that we must focus on is on the communal farmers. Because we are aware, most of them are not yet producing at an optimal level. The commercial farmers are already at an optimal level. So if we can afford to close that gap between where our smallholders are and where our commercial farmers are and close that gap and make them equal, surely that will have a serious positive impact on our food production or the income production, and in this case, when we refer to our wool through our National Wool Growers Association. I think that is our last question that I see here, Honorable Chair and other members.
Thank you very much. The DG and the department. Honorable members, that is the response from the provincial department and the national department. I think the approach that will be using is that on fisheries, because we don't have much time. On fisheries, we are not going to have an opportunity when we are interacting with the department on the on their quarterly presentation to the portfolio committee. And on Wool Growers Association, we want to appreciate the responses, but we still need a discussion between ourselves and the department and the Wool Growers Association, because there are a lot of issues that need to be cleared to them. I think those are the issue of fisheries members will not don't make follow-up question if you have. We'll still have time to interact with the department and issues around Wool Growers Association. We're still going to have the interaction with them where the department will be present and the NAMMAC. Remember that we asked them questions that were raised by NAMMAC and they were they have not responded to those questions. We still need to have them. Just want to take again the opportunity to thank the provincial department for their presentation. Honorable members, you can ask follow-up questions if you
name?
Honorable
thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, members. I'll love to hear that I have specified one question on fisheries, but lovely, I've got one question. I'm just on the presence of farm here.
I said on fisheries, questions have been suspended until we're going to meet with the department.
No, I'm talking about the presence of farm.
Oh, okay.
All right. Yes. Prince of Arms. That is aimed to be used by the beneficiaries that were not intended. I just want to check now with the department. That is this Prince of Arms that is aimed to be used by the unintended beneficiaries. So I want to check now with the department. Perhaps it's not possible to prevent it from happening. Perhaps it is mentioned that those that were intended to make use of this farm were not organized. I think now was it possible to prevent it from happening? Because now we are starting to try not to get some means of doing away with this problem. Thank you very much.
I know that Honorable Young Blues were teachers, so unfortunately.
Yes. If some other questions I would like to ask, and that is with regards to Magua, where did I see it? Magua Plantation. There's a response which refers to money owed to people. Lots of money. Where did I see that? 23. Arrears salary. How come these people are owed so much money? 33 million. Almost 34 million rand in total owed to Magua employees with regards to salaries. Is maybe you can explain what is happening there. I don't understand my own handwriting. Okay, I'll leave it at that for now. Let me find the other questions I have. Thanks.
I think the 1,800 which has been paid by the farmers. Listening to the DG is a very it's a very good initiative in making sure that people own up to the to what they are doing, and even in terms of them making living out of their production. The worry factor is that it's not standardized GM, which will require the department to look at this issue throughout the country, because from the conditional grant, by that we are able to say, because like in other provinces, you find that they're supposed to provide mechanization and seeds, nothing is paid by farmers. And if we don't standardize this issue, it will create problems in the near future. Immediately when we get farmers from Limpopo or farmers from Eastern Cape visiting Limpopo or KZN and find them that government is providing this for free, they are not paying anything in Eastern Cape, it can cause us problems. We suggest that the national department work with provinces to standardize what support is the farmer and how long, because the support must end at some point people care themselves. Yeah. So there should be the standardization throughout the country, which it can prevent the challenges that we might face in the future. The second issue is on the farms for LRAP. GM, we have engaged portfolio committee on rural development. At least the next visit, were going to Mpumalanga, we'll be joined by them. We're going with them because the issues of recapitalization, air rights, and ESTA and all those things has created problems for agriculture. We want them to join us and to get a solution to the how then do we revive agriculture in those areas that land has been procured by government. So we're planning to have a visit to Mpumalanga with them. If we succeed with in the next meetings, we'll have a way forward around the issues. Yes. DG, you can respond to those questions that have been raised. They are allowed to speak.
Oh, thank you very much, Chair. I, on the farm, principal farm, I think I was going to kind of like let you what the DMS said. You know, the collaboration between DAF and the land reform and rural development in the issue of what I think that collaboration, that joint, you know, will help us a lot to avoid problems of this nature. Because issuing a farm and then the not linked to the support services is creating these problems. So I think the proposal, I think what the DM was saying earlier on about these 20 partners actually working very close when it comes to this, which can eliminate. Because they're not the only farm actually with this. There are quite so many of these farms which actually suffering in this way. And when you trace it, you just notice that maybe this farm was issued and then the support was not linked to that farm. So I think that proposal is going to assist us very, very well. On the issue of Magwa, if the company was profitable operation, it's supposed to sustain its employees. But the way it is now, here the company is operating, but the state has paid salaries. That is why, honorable member, this issue of the business review plan came into being to address those. Because the people are there, but there is no profit being made. What is produced there can sustain to pay electricity and a few things. Unfortunately, it's unable to pay them the salaries. Hence, therefore, the state was now and again supporting and paying them the salary. If you look at it, therefore, it means, therefore, Magwa has got to be supported by salaries by the state throughout. Unless, therefore, if the new plan is put into effect so that it corrects that. That is why, if you look at the pay, those items, the sustainability, etc., are part of the issues that have to be taken into account to make sure that whatever is done out of the rescue plan, the company can sustain it as sustainability has been mentioned as one of the critical issues.
Some of the other questions I wanted to ask Honorable Chair. So the with regards to question number 65, the AIC involvement in that specific project, does the department expect the AIC to be more involved, to go more often? Or is it fine that they only go now and again and phone to ask what is happening there? What is expected of them in terms of that? Then point 85, you referred to versions being provided to train people to be sheep shearers. And then you say that last year, only 14 individuals were...
That question belongs to another meeting.
To another meeting?
Yeah.
Okay. And the problem of the 89, is that another meeting too?
Which one, please?
The labor cost in the East is the plan to utilize South African laborers.
Yes.
It's also another meeting?
Yes.
Okay, thanks.
DG and MC, we had a meeting where we invited the provinces after receiving the conditional grant report, the official report, which one of the things that as we were moving around was raised was the issue of the extensive recovery plan. I you were not part of those meetings. Those provinces that were there, they were able to respond through the AG. If you can just brief us in terms of, because one of the things that we have noticed is that you don't have enough accreditation officers. And through the conditional grant, there is a part that is allocated for training for extension services. If we can just get clarity on, do you have such a plan and what is your what is your intention for 2016? Are you going to increase your extension officers through that program? But the other thing that you request is the details on the agri-tax, such that when we are going to have a meeting with the committee on, of rural development and land reform, we are able to talk with information, evidence. Yeah, we'll request that you can forward it later. Fine. And you have not told us why you have not attended the meeting in HOT when we called the provinces to account on conditional grant. It was last year? When was it? 3 weeks ago. This was, yes, provinces were here. When we're dealing with the annual report of the of national department, because one of the things that we've discovered in the annual report of NAP was that issues that are raised by Orisha General was in program 3 and 5, which involves provinces. So we have took a decision that because we want clean audits. You remember that the president has declared this year as a clean audit and it has passed. So our intention is that to work with provinces to make sure that those issues that are raised by Auditor General and this unreliable information that is not verifiable, missing documents, it should not repeat themselves in the next financial year. We had invited the HOD to be part of the meeting with the Auditor General to listen so that in the next annual report to perform better, because they had an unqualified report, but they couldn't get a clean audit because of problems. So we have to work together to make sure that we achieve the plan of the president of getting the thing put. Though already the years passed on, but if we do it 2015, it will be better because it will still be within his care. Yes. So, did you?
Yes. Thank you so much, Honorable Chair and members. Let me start with this last one, the attendance of the meeting. I'm so sorry, Honorable Chair, that the apology that we sent that DG made was conveyed. Remember that day we were the host of the Wild Food Day. So it was very difficult for me to hear. I spoke with the DG and I requested the DG to convey the apology. I really apologize for this. The coming to the issue, DG, as you touch, Honorable Chair, when you touch on the issue of the performance, I'm not sure if I'll try to provide you later with the actual facts. On our side, we were unqualified on the performance information as well as on exercise. So we got an unqualified opinion, but fully aware on the social, what were the efforts of better issues. But here I won't manage to, I can't have them on my head. What were the issues? But I don't recall we had really serious instances of matter that were raised by AG or on the performance side, but we were obviously unqualified as well on both sides. But I would be able to provide that information.
No, actually it was the report of DAF which shows that they were qualified, that the issues were raised because there were no information that was received by the provinces. There were unreliable information which Auditor General cannot make sense out of those information. Which they report, then the matter of emphasis was raised in the
island. In their own?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
So we say that I was just informing the province that we had this meeting.
Yes.
So that as we live here, we can then be able to work closely with the Agriculture Department, particularly on program 3 and 5.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Thanks so much. Coming to the issue of extension, I indicated that we are already at 54.5%, goes to our COE. But I must mention here that the other day I had a meeting with the DG of the province where we agreed that we shall prioritize the technical or the core business, and one of them are the extension officers. You will notice that, honorable and members, we tried to pick AGs when we were doing some recruitment of extension officers a couple of months ago. The norms and standards, they require NQF survey. But what we did, because we are mindful of the students who are coming from Wakos, Shigara, all these colleges, they come out there with NQF slips. So what we did, we created extension assistants so that they could be in, and then while they are in, we train them to upgrade, to move up to NQF 7. I think that didn't go well, but we had to abandon that process. So, but what we are actually doing now, we are going to kind of like try to recruit most of them as interns, so that we have them in, to support in our, production and support and just support the farmers. We hope that while they are in, they will be able to be supported to get up to NQF 7. In fact, a person is only 1 year, because they've got a 3-year diploma, and they only need just a small kick of 1 year to jump now into NQF 7. So I think we are in the process, Mr. Chair. We are going to continue recruiting extension officers. Of course, we've got the largest number, if not mistaken, of extension in the country, but we're around 700 extension officers. So, but we still, because of the province being diverse, across activities, we haven't managed to reach the required norms and standards, the standards as stipulated by the norms and standards in extension. So the process of extension, we are unable to terminate on the process of recruitment.
No, thank you. I think national should actually help us on the next of this, because it's part of the money that we went to province for the recovery plan. So we should get national to develop interest. I had one premier was saying they're going to employ TWC people to be extension officer. So I think the more we can clarify, I was with the DM, he remembers. In one issue, the premier was saying, no, we get a lot of EPWT people to go and become essential officers. It might be that they are not aware of what the requirements of what's needed. I think national should actually work with the provinces to get it correct because for us to succeed in agriculture, we need extension officers, qualified extension officers. You have even rural development has developed interest in PM for your information. They are teaching extension officers, and you don't know whether they are using the norm, the same norms and standards that the department has created. So if we don't intervene when it's still early, you're going to see good these people who are not qualifying for the coming years, and it's going to be very difficult. The proactiveness of the national department will be useful to us, all of us. So that even if those that have money wants to, like rural development, because usually they have a lot of money that's hanging somewhere. So as they use the money, they should use it correctly to empower us. So we'll appreciate if we can pick up GM. And that was the last issue. Thank you very much, Province and the National Department, for attending this meeting. And we are visiting one of the projects in Stellenbosch. You are invited if you want to send in your official. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned. Bye.